Discussion keeps the world turning.
This is Round Table.
The past century witnessed mankind's many remarkable and historic landmarks in space exploration. If the earlier achievements were attained with support from powerful state actors, now enterprises are playing an increasingly more pronounced role in our recent endeavors. Hello, I'm Lai Ming, and this is Roundtable. Today, with my colleagues Niu Ho Ling and Brandon Yates, we will brief you on the progress in the commercial aerospace industry in China and around the world. And aerospace, commercial aerospace, this all sound like, you know, lofty, up in the air kind of topic for an average listener like me or an average person like me. Why does it matter? Why does it matter to Roundtable, and why does it matter to the average listener who's really tuning in here?
Well, to start with, commercial aerospace refers to space activities that are market-oriented and have a commercial profit model. Market, commercial, and profit are the key words here. And commercial aerospace first appeared in the world, I think, even before the 20th century. And we see that people started to talking about whether or not we can make use of the aerospace, make use of the, for example, signal, the technology to better people's livelihood. And today it has become a reality that we are taking advantage of commercial aerospace technologies and commercial aerospace services. For example, we get to see that one thing that's particularly interesting is under the drive of commercial space innovation, application scenarios have encompassed a wide range of fields, including land surveying, water resources, forestry, agriculture, electric power, emergency management, environmental protection, marine technology, and smart city development. Mm. And I know I have made a list of things, so let me
nerdy.
A little nerdy, but I find it very interesting. Let's talk about one of the most notable example here in China, that is the remote sensing monitoring. We know in 2023, Chinese commercial satellites were constantly visible in their active role in disaster response. Actually, after the Zhuozhou rains in August, the National Disaster Reduction Center released a report showing that the emergency department had collected a total of more than 600 scenes of data from the North China region, including more than 350 scenes from national civilian satellites and 71 from commercial satellites. It is evident that commercial satellites have become an essential force in monitoring natural disasters in the country. In the meantime, many of the rescuers actually helping people during different disasters, and especially during the one in Beijing, the Zhuozhou rains we talked about earlier, they carried a palm-sized yellow terminal device with them. And this device can send a high-precision location signal from any area, significantly increasing the success rate, the rescue efforts, and addressing the urgent needs of areas where communication is actually disrupted by the heavy rain. And these around 60 personal satellite emergency communication terminal devices were donated by a private company named Guodian High Tech, which these devices are small, lightweight, and low energy consuming, and they can be very helpful in these very extreme situations.
Mm-hmm. Well, aerospace and satellites, they work up in the air, up in the space, and they sometimes have a very big role to play when it comes to matters related to the planet, planetary issues, like when it happens, when there is an accident, when there is a disaster. Sometimes it comes very handy when you have a pair of devices on your hand and when you find yourself caught up in a disaster. I mean, that's for sure. But we don't often get caught in such disasters.
Well, I believe somebody.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, hiking is a very popular activity in South Africa, and particularly in the Western Cape. We're blessed with so many different hiking routes and mountains, and the scenery is really spectacular. But it does make the average person think they can become an expert hiker and hike alone, which is something I did and will never do again, unless it's a very recognized route. But unfortunately, on a hike, I got myself into a bit of a situation where the clouds descended very rapidly and my vision was completely obscured, and I decided to stop hiking. And sent out a rescue call, and I sent them my location on my cell phone, and I'm not sure what kind of tech is used there. I don't know if it involves satellite technology or not, but it took them quite a long time to find me. I know On the rescuers' first expedition, they went up the wrong route and they had to go all the way back down the mountain again and start the climb again. And then eventually found me, and this was about 5 hours later. So I think any advancements in, aerospace technology that could potentially help save time. It wasn't a disaster. I was okay. There weren't floods or, anything major like that. And it wasn't large groups of people that were being affected by some sort of disaster. But I think any sort of development that can help disaster relief efforts is a fantastic initiative.
And not only are people like Brandon, who are outdoor adventurers or extreme sports enthusiasts, who would need such activity or may in need of such services when they are enjoying their adventures. Actually, if we talk about marine workers who would have to work on the sea, actually, if they fell into water, even if they're wearing life jackets, rescue personnel cannot locate them. And the life jackets cannot fully function. And now there are certain terminals that you can integrate with these life jackets. And when they are activated, they can continuously transmitting the location to a designated receiver for 72 hours after falling into the water, which would make the rescue work much more efficient and much more in time.
Mm-hmm.
But I get what Lai Ming is saying. Not everyone is going to need the service in these kind of situations,
yeah.
Which is why actually aerospace technology or services can be very helpful in other occasions as well. For example, it can work in the protection of our environment in mysterious ways. No, not really mysterious. I'm just...
Scientific ways.
Actually, in Shanghai, a high-resolution satellite remote sensing image can quickly screen the river channel shorelines, identify areas with potential sewage outlets. And with this info, relevant department can then use unmanned or manned boats equipped with artificial intelligence, image capture, and 5G transmission devices for more precise inspections. So this is another implication or application of the service.
Sure, and we are living in a world where everything is getting digitalized and getting hooked up to the internet. However, these things, for them to work, they all rely power and then connection. And in places, New Holland just mentioned a relatively developed part of the country, but there are less developed countries, developed part of the country, for instance, in the northwest of this country where there aren't a lot of people and the infrastructure isn't that ready. So even if we were able to, deploy these Internet of Things or technologies or devices to monitor the environment, to help keep the place safe, without connection, everything is not possible. You have to have a way for these devices to talk to each other, to talk to the grid. And satellite certainly is a way to do it.
Yeah, and I think it's similar to some other topics that we've spoken about in the past where, a lot of technological developments are being made in various sectors like education we've spoken about recently where, a lot of innovative tools are being used to connect people around the country to the internet and having access to education. But then a large part of that, like we mentioned with satellites and, aerospace technology and that kind of thing, a lot of it is also linked to educating large parts of the population about how to use this tech. Because if that doesn't take place, then like we've already mentioned, that tech isn't really useful. So I think it's going to be interesting to see that hand in hand with this development is educating people that will be needing to use this tech on a daily basis in a couple of the sectors we've already mentioned.
That is also a very important and interesting point, because nowadays the kind of advancement we are looking at is the ones that do not involve a lot of educating the public, because they are going to be using the same techniques they're using currently or updating the kind of techniques without their knowledge of operating on their devices. They'll be using the same devices, it's just the devices would be updated.
Right.
So the signals are going to be more stable, the coverage would be enlarged. And that is one of another reasons I find this area that is often neglected, yet very important. And one other example I have with this commercial aerospace is actually quite interesting. I came across a, I think a doctoral student, a PhD, still in the progress of getting his PhD, actually sending out dozens of satellites alongside with the major satellites that the commercial companies are sending out to space with the kind of experiment they need to do in space. And that actually happened. You would initially imagine sending out satellites to the vast space, something that only huge companies or a nation could do. But nowadays, university students, well, though it's a PhD student, the team could do that so that they would get the data they need, they would get the results of the kind of experiment that have to happen in space they need to do for their research. So this is also very important.
So there's increasing demand for the aerospace industry to provide more solutions, and there are more scenarios for technologies as such to be deployed and be effective and efficient in, say, in meeting people's demand. However, the old-fashioned way of developing the aerospace industry has become quite obsolete in meeting the demand of the general population. I mean, many decades ago, in the 20th century specifically, the aerospace industry, there was some level of commercialization involved, but still the major actors were states, the United States, the Soviet Union, and China. And so, in fact, it was reportedly the arms race in the space that really got the old Soviet Union into trouble, really costing the country or the union a lot in terms of the resources it was able to command and the technology it was able to pursue. But again, we are now living in a different age now. Like I said earlier, everything is being digitalized and there's a growing demand for that. And apparently there's more, there's the necessity for the previous practice to change from maybe an industry dominated, if not monopolized by the state, to be somehow shared by the private sector as well.
Oh, definitely. Moreover, in the field of aerospace, we used to prioritize safety and reliability, especially when it comes to national security, defense construction, these things, where there is no room for error, definitely. However, in our economic development and some everyday applications, actually cost becomes an extremely important factor. In these contexts, we would allow commercial space to seek the optional balance in innovation, fault tolerance, cost reduction. And only when cost is bringing down can we actually largely commercialize such activities and benefit our everyday life.
I guess with the commercialization of this industry as well, it takes some of the pressure off of the commercial sector to not be focused on some of those areas that we mentioned, like with national security and that kind of thing. And they can rather focus on innovation and how they can use this tech to better people's everyday lives when it's not linked to such serious issues. So I guess that's one of the benefits of allowing the commercial space to get involved in this industry as well.
Right. If the state were the only actor in the development of the aerospace industry, then the priority of the development will only be set by one actor, namely the state. I mean, the state certainly would prioritize national defense and issues and projects that are related to the general population for as large as possible. And then as such, certain specific needs, like the needs of a doctoral degrees candidate, will be ignored. But again, like we said earlier, the demand and the scenarios for the application of this technology is increasing. And as such, we need more supplementary input into this industry, and hence the growing popularity of commercial aerospace companies here.
Definitely. Actually, on April this year, the Hainan International Commercial Aerospace Launch Site, the first commercial aerospace launch site in China, has gained great popularity. We know the site is still under construction, yet many leading domestic commercial aerospace companies have already started queuing up for launching at the site. So we get to see in 2024 this year, we are looking at some possible launching of commercial satellites out to the space, different experiment, different services, and even the bringing down of prices when it comes to satellite, for example, TV or satellite telephone, if you have such needs.
Mm-hmm. And there's also the issue of cost. I mean, if it's now public interest or national interest involved, then sometimes if the state as an actor is to make the decisions, it doesn't necessarily make the decision in terms of the economic input and output ratio. Sometimes other factors will be at play here. But now with the growing demand, it's more necessary than before to consider the issue of cost. And as such, maybe private companies that are meant to be market-oriented and profit-seeking have a better, you know, capacity at reducing cost and making it more efficient.
There are actually different ways to bring down the cost. We've already talked about we've talked about the necessity to do so, and actually a lot of private companies as well as the nation's let's say public companies have been doing innovative experiment in bringing down the case. And I have an example here. Actually, there has been the utilizing of new flexible solar wing technology in aerospace or in the satellites. Previously, satellites generally use those rigid solar wings that were several centimeters thick and non-foldable. In contrast, now we're trying to use these flexible solar wings that are less than a 1 millimeter thick and resulting in a smaller envelope, lighter weight, and easier storage. And flexible solar wings can reduce the satellite's weight by 20% and potentially up to 40% in the future, greatly decreasing the launch costs.
And generally, competition amongst public companies often leads to innovation in various areas, and a lot of that innovation also leads to cost reduction.
Yeah, the innovation certainly is another part at play here, and that is if the state is not the only actor here. I mean, the priority certainly would be to try and make it secure, make it safe, make the dream or the mission come true. But I mean, in the meantime, not a lot of resources may be devoted into innovating and changing things a bit. I mean, but now with more actors at play here in the industry,
with less responsibility than the government would have.
Right. And then there's also a certain division of labor. Certain industries can be focused on meeting the demands of, for instance, the entertainment industry or whatnot, whereas the state can be more focused on issues that are related to national defense and public interest.
Well, but the state also is trying to bring down the cost to be exact. Actually, there is this infrastructure development in the commercial space sector, because when it comes to infrastructure construction, actually the state needs to be a very important part in it. And for example, China constructed its first maritime launch port. And in September 2023, we've seen the launching of a sea-launched rocket from this port, placing four satellites into the orbit. And with this, actually, it can serve the function of the previous services we talked about, monitoring the situation on Earth, constructing images, and also this place is even open to public when they're not launching a satellite into the orbit, meaning that you can even travel on that ship. Take a look at what the state-of-the-art, top-of-notch technology is like.
Mm-hmm. And also, there are bigger players in this industry. In the US, the SpaceX obviously is a big company here. It launched rockets for 116 times in the year 2023, 98 of which were from one commercial aerospace company, SpaceX. So it was representing the majority of rocket launches in the US.
And the first time seeing those rockets return, you know, and land back where they had launched from, when I saw that for the first time, that was mind-blowing to me. Those reusable rockets, I thought that was amazing.
Ooh. Oh, being reusable is also very important.
The same kind of technology is being pursued here in China as well. And China has its own unique advantage in pursuing commercial aerospace industry development in the sense that we have a rather complete industrial category, meaning we have the ability to manufacture almost all the essential components to make up satellites and other rockets, ships, that kind of thing. So that's one of China's advantages here.
Being able to do everything domestically.
Right. At a relatively lower price compared to a company, to a country that's different, that doesn't have such a complete industrial category.
I'm going to sound a little bit nerdy here, but I really do want to provide
another
example.
Like this hasn't been completely nerdy already. My mind is spinning.
Because it's a really interesting thing. Initially, when I saw the news in April last year, the Tianlong second liquid carrier rocket developed by Space Pioneer successfully made its maiden flight. I didn't understand how is that such an important info or such an important step in commercial aerospace industry. Then I realized the liquid rockets or the liquid oxygen methane rockets have several advantages, including ease of reuse, flexible payload capacity, and low cost. More importantly, in the future, whether on Mars or on moons like in Titan, there are abundant raw materials available for producing these liquid oxygen and methane, which means that if satellite travel is realized, spacecraft could potentially refuel using local resources.
I think that's always been a criticism of space travel in the past, is that, you know, it is a very expensive and non-renewable sort of technology.
Yes.
But now, as progression is being made in China and the States and all across the world, the costs are being reduced, but also these technologies that were previously a one-use tech are now becoming reusable, which is fantastic.
And commercial aerospace industry development is important also in the sense that it's not going to only meet the demand from one particular country. I mean, given the size of the market in this country, certainly we need to work hard to meet the demand growing here in this country. Still, with big players only in the industry, like the United States and China and Europe and Russia and India. India, they actually managed to land a probe on the moon last year. Mm-hmm. So with that many actors in the industry, still there's only a few options. Only powerful states with abundance of investment and resources can afford to have an industry like that. For those smaller countries who don't necessarily have all the resources, talent, and technology, turning into the private sector of one particular country might be a solution to get their demands met.
Yeah, definitely. And you can also tag along with the major launch of different satellites with your little satellites alongside. And in the meantime, we get to see that actually when it comes to aerospace or when it comes to satellites, there already is this limited resources. Globally, the competition in the commercial satellite sector mainly centers on low Earth orbit satellites, as the number of high Earth orbit satellites is limited and already near saturation. In addition to these, we see China Aerospace and Science and Technology Corporation proposed in July to start the construction of an ultra-low orbit satellite construction, and that is also trying to create more resources or create more space for people to develop.
This once again is an example of the division of labor between the state as an actor and private sector as another increasingly more important actor in the development of the aerospace industry. This all sounds very ideal and amazing, but in order for the industry to develop healthily, and certain policies or certain measures will have to be in place so that investors feel secure in getting their money into the industry. And remember, we are talking about investment in the number of billions.
Yes, and in the meantime, we see a relatively, in my opinion, very bright future out there. For example, nowadays, we are using the Internet of Things in different ways. We are purchasing online almost every day and having the basic infrastructure moving, possibly in the future, from on Earth to in the sky or in the air, in the space would be a much safer option.
Mm-hmm. And also, one last point, and that is not only are private enterprises involved here, maybe regional governments like Beijing, Shanghai, and provincial governments are also getting involved, and that also introduces some kind of diversity into an emerging industry.